Today is Thursday, December 13th. This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, the U.S. Senate pushes for a vote on banning support for Saudi Arabia's efforts in Yemen.
The current relationship with Saudi Arabia is not working for America.
President Trump's former longtime attorney is sentenced to 3 years in prison. British Prime Minister Theresa May survives a no-confidence vote. And a pop star with a hot new single pays a visit to Washington. It's all on today's International Edition. President Donald Trump's former personal attorney, Michael Cohen, was sentenced to 3 years in prison Wednesday in connection with campaign finance violations and lying to Congress. Cohen has emerged as a key witness in the Russia investigation led by special counsel Robert Mueller into whether there was collusion between the Trump presidential campaign and Russia in 2016. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone has more on the significance of the Cohen sentencing.
Former Trump attorney Michael Cohen quickly made his way past reporters outside federal court in New York City after being sentenced to 3 years in prison. Inside, Cohen told a federal judge that it was his blind loyalty to Donald Trump that led him to cover up what he called President Trump's dirty deeds. Cohen had previously pleaded guilty to violating campaign finance laws by arranging payments to buy the silence of two women before the 2016 election who had alleged affairs with Donald Trump several years earlier. In previous court documents, prosecutors said Cohen told them he arranged the hush money at Trump's direction, a significant admission, says legal reporter Chad Day.
Now, Trump has denied those affairs, but what these court papers show is that Cohen has told prosecutors, and they believe it was substantial conduct, criminal conduct, that he did at the direction of the president.
Cohen was also sentenced in connection with lying to Congress about Trump's interest in a building project in Russia while he was a presidential candidate. President Trump has denied any collusion between his campaign and Russia and has slammed the probe led by special counsel Robert Mueller as a witch hunt. Last month, he blasted Cohen for cooperating with prosecutors.
Michael Cohen is lying and he's trying to get a reduced sentence for things that have nothing to do with me.
In addition to Cohen, former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn will be sentenced next week in connection with the Russia probe. Flynn has admitted lying to investigators about his contacts with the Russian ambassador before Trump's inauguration. The Mueller probe is intensifying and could be headed for a climax early next year, says analyst Rick Simmons.
We were expecting Cohen to provide information, which he obviously did, to Mueller. And he's done a lot of work with other witnesses that have flipped, and that he's had months to work with them too. So I would expect that we'd see some sort of conclusion of this within the next few months.
Cohen, who once said he would take a bullet for Trump, will begin serving his jail sentence on March 6th. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
And joining us now for further analysis on this and the impact it could have on the president is George Mason University Professor of Governmental Affairs, Robert Dice. What do you think?
I think it has. I think part of the reason that Mr. Trump seems to be even more Mr. Trump than he was is I think he's feeling the circle tightening. And I say that for a couple of reasons. You know, he seemed to be almost giddy after the Cohen sentencing. He was pointing out how no collusion and this vindicated him 100%. It's just the opposite. Mr. Cohen admitted that he, together with individual one, which is the president, conspired to violate federal election law. Well, that's a big deal because the federal election law violation is a felony. It is a marked event when a president is identified as a co-conspirator who's committed a felony. The second thing that I think is important about this is sentencing memos serve a number of purposes. And one of the purposes it serves, aside from telling the judge why a person ought to be sentenced to how long and so forth, But another purpose is to send signals out to all those who are thinking about but haven't yet committed to pleading guilty. Because what the sentencing memo will lay out, even if you have to kind of read between the lines because of all the redactions, is we've got the goods. And if you want to be treated gently in sentencing, you better start cooperating.
You mentioned the president being identified in the indictment against Michael Cohen as Individual One. If someone is labeled as Individual One, does that mean that person is under investigation?
Of course it does. You're not going to hit a person like Cohen over the head for committing a felony while saying about his co-conspirator, that's okay. So, yeah, I think this is a really big deal. I also think that Mr. Trump is likely worried about his children because there are numerous accounts out now that I think at least two, but I think maybe all three of his children were in contact with various Russians. And that's got to be worrisome to Mr. Trump.
Is it possible Michael Cohen didn't even completely cooperate with all of these investigations, including the Southern District of New York?
Correct.
Is it possible that he could change his mind and start cooperating and thereby implicate the president even more?
Of course. One of the, I think, impressive things about the Mueller investigation is how tight it's been. I am not aware of any leaks coming out of that office, but I think it's very likely that he will continue now that he got, you know, sort of whacked for not completely cooperating. I think now he will completely cooperate, partly because he's a relatively young man who's lost his job, his profession, and his dignity. I know if I were in that situation, I would certainly want to vindicate my honor, demonstrate respect for my wife, my children, and so forth, friends. So, yeah, I think that's very likely. Bear in mind, he was Mr. Trump's fixer.
The tabloid, the National Enquirer, the publisher of that newspaper that who was very close to President Trump and for decades apparently would see that stories that were negative to the president went away, so to speak.
Yes.
Is now apparently cooperating with these investigations. What do you make of that?
Well, I find that kind of interesting because I doubt whether the National Enquirer holds evidence per se against Mr. Trump. But I suspect that the publisher can be a very helpful tour guide.
Ultimately, it would appear that certainly with the Mueller investigation and possibly also the Southern District,
yep,
things seem to be getting closer and closer to the inner circle of the president and the president himself, possibly. Is it likely or possible that the president will actually be indicted?
Probably not, only because the Department of Justice has ruled that a sitting president may not be indicted. I disagree with that, by the way, for whatever it's worth. But what that will do or could do is send a signal to the states, New York specifically, I think Maryland as well, and Pennsylvania, send a signal to the states saying, this is what we're doing. We're, you know, if we do anything with Mr. Trump, it's going to happen down the road when he's no longer president. And in the meantime, if you guys want to do something, have at it.
All right. That's George Mason University Professor of Governmental Affairs, Robert Deitz. Here are some of the stories we are following at voanews.com. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo says Iran is increasing its ballistic missile activity. In France, a manhunt continues for the Strasbourg attacker. Sustainable tree farming means better lives for Kenyan farmers. And insurance claims are at $9 billion now from California's wildfires. Find expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com. and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. The U.S. Senate attempted late Wednesday to deal a historic rebuke to Saudi Arabia, a longtime U.S. ally, advancing a resolution to end American support for the kingdom's military intervention in Yemen's civil war. The Republican-led chamber voted 60-39 to begin debate on the measure, acting in defiance of the Trump administration, which had strenuously argued against a rupture of cooperation between Washington and Riyadh. Republican Senator Lindsey Graham has been particularly outspoken on the issue.
The current relationship with Saudi Arabia is not working for America. They have been strategic allies and could be in the future. But right now, it is more of a burden than it is an asset. And why do I say that? This country, led by the de facto leader as the crown prince, has been a wrecking ball. And the Khashoggi incident is just one of many, but the most egregious. And I think most people can relate to why we're upset.
Congressional ire toward Saudi Arabia has been simmering for years as Yemen's civil war dragged on and ever higher civilian death tolls. Anger spiked after dissident Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi was murdered at the kingdom's consulate in Turkey 2 months ago. Yemen's warring parties, though, have reportedly agreed to reopen Sana'a Airport in the Houthi-held capital and resume oil and gas exports as Western nations press them to accept confidence-building steps before the end of UN-led peace talks in Sweden. Two sides are still discussing the UN proposal on the contested port city of Hodeidah, a lifeline for millions of Yemenis facing starvation. VOA's Victor Beatty asks Anthony Billingsley, senior Middle East lecturer at the University of New South Wales, if this could actually be a significant breakthrough.
It'll be very, very significant. The divisions have been so extreme for so long. It's hard to see how they're going to get together. But I think a lot of it comes down to what's been going on in Washington and the Khashoggi murder, putting a lot of pressure on the Saudis to change their approach.
You're talking about the Senate action on a resolution that would end U.S. support for the coalition effort in Yemen.
Yeah, that's right. The resolution that's being talked about for Thursday is probably largely symbolic, but the fact that you've got Lindsey Graham, you've got a bipartisan group of senators who seem to be very strongly intent on sending the message to Saudi Arabia. I think the Crown Prince, Mohammed bin Salman, must be taking this into account. He must be very aware of the pressure building up in Washington.
Well, I understand the pressure on the Saudis, but what is the incentive for the Houthi rebels who control much of the population centers of the country? What incentive do they have?
Well, that's true, except that they have been suffering intensely. They and the people that they are ruling have been suffering intensely from Saudi airstrikes, civilian centers, as well as military targets. And I think they must realize that they cannot continue the way they're going forever. I mean, they're very much on their own when it comes to waging this conflict with limited political support and very limited military support from outside as well.
So what happens now to this country that has been absolutely ravaged by this conflict? Is there hope, do you think, that this will finally come to an end, perhaps as early as next year?
Well, they've been through this a number of times in the past, maybe not quite as savage and as widespread as this, but they have cobbled things together. If you have an agreement that genuinely involves the problem with the existing arrangement that was set up largely by the Saudis and the Emiratis, was that the Houthi were very specifically excluded from the political process. Now, if the Houthi can say, well, okay, we're going to make these concessions, and there are some that they seem to be willing to make, such as over Hodeidah, they have to have a voice at the table from here on in. So they have to be able to see that their interests are recognized in the government structure that's to emerge.
Of course, we're a long way from a political settlement, but what would you envision it might look like? For instance, how can these two bitter enemies, the Saudi coalition, the Houthis, live side by side in peace?
Well, I think, you know, it's a matter of political will and also the behavior of the Saudis in particular. The issue with Iran is sort of constantly brought up as the boogeyman in all of this, but Iran's influence on the Houthis has been very limited and their role has been opportunistic at most. So there's not much pressure on them as such. They, I think, are quite capable of recognizing where their interests lie, and their interests don't lie in continued conflict because ultimately the cost is so great for them and for their people. So I think you'll see some sort of system that will recognize their role, will possibly give them, it may have a power-sharing arrangement, at least in the short term, which would ensure that they could protect their interests in the future. And that'll be, I think, probably at the heart of what Griffiths is offering.
If a breakthrough is reached, this has to be a particularly sweet victory for the UN in general and Martin Griffiths, the envoy, in particular.
It seems he has done an extraordinary job. And I think what he's done has been to embed himself personally in some of the really detailed aspects of the negotiation process. So, for example, there was an attempt at a meeting some months ago, and the Houthi failed to leave Yemen, claiming that the Saudis wouldn't allow them out. This time, Griffith actually went with the Houthi delegation to the conference, to the meetings, and he's been very much directly engaged. And I think he must have done a very superb job in establishing the confidence of the two parties. They can see that he's, you know, he is really trying objectively to come up with a solution for them all.
That's Anthony Billingsley, Senior Middle East Lecturer at the University of New South Wales. British Prime Minister Theresa May survived a no-confidence vote to retain her job and prevent another leadership challenge until the next general election. May won 200 to 117 votes among her fellow Conservatives in the House of Commons Wednesday.
This has been a long and challenging day, but at the end of it, I'm pleased to have received the backing of my colleagues in tonight's ballot. Whilst I'm grateful for that support, a significant number of colleagues did cast a vote against me, and I've listened to what they said.
Britain is due to, in a closed meeting with Conservative lawmakers before the vote. May said she'd step down as Britain's leader before the anticipated 2022 election, a move aimed at winning over some lawmakers who were undecided going into the secret ballot.
Following this ballot, we now need to get on with the job of delivering Brexit for the British people and building a better future for this country. A Brexit that delivers on the vote that people gave, that brings back control of our money, our borders and our laws, that protects jobs, security and the union, that brings the country back together rather than entrenching division.
Britain's due to exit the EU on March 29th as a result of a 2016 referendum. The two sides worked out an agreement on the divorce terms after lengthy negotiations, but it still must be approved by Britain's parliament. Earlier this week, May canceled a planned vote during which it seemed certain to fail. May has subsequently been trying to save the agreement through talks with European leaders, but EU officials have been firm about their lack of desire to renegotiate the terms. She is scheduled to participate in an EU summit later today. You're listening to International Edition on VOA.
Our voices, we're talking about the news and issues you're talking about.
Sharing stories of development and growth across Africa, around the world, and in our lives. Topics that inform, empower,
and change the rules.
It's time for Our Voices with me, Haiti Adams Fitzpatrick.
And Hadiza Kiari.
And Ayan Bior.
And Orion Itangi Shaka.
Join us on Facebook at VOA Our Voices.
It's time for Our Voices.
VOA's International Edition continues. As 2018 comes to a close, there are still a few new movies getting a lot of buzz. And joining us now to get details is Vegas film critic Jeffrey K. Howard. Hi, Jeff. So you've got two films today. Let's start with Roma. Well, what's that one all about?
The two movies we're talking today, we're going international today on your show. Roma is from director Alfonso Cuarón, who most moviegoers know from Gravity with George Clooney and Sandra Bullock a few years ago. He also directed one of the Harry Potters, Prisoner of Azkaban. But this time, this is his most personal project to date. And it's about his childhood growing up in Mexico. And the movie follows Cleo, played by Yaltiza Aparicio, who's never acted before in her life. She's a young domestic worker for a family in a middle-class neighborhood of Roma in Mexico City. And, you know, Cuarón has delivered this incredible love letter to the women who raised him. And he draws on his own childhood to create these incredible memories and this emotional setting of his life where, of course, there's it shows different class struggles, the political turmoil of the 1970s. But this is just a groundbreaking film because it just talks about family. It talks about all the hardships they endure. You know, there's infidelity in the family. There's it's just an amazing film. And the cinematography, the direction, there are shots that Cuarón does that just goes on for long, long, long takes. And it's also extremely emotional. And this was picked up by Netflix, believe it or not, the new big boy on the block. And they're taking chances on all these incredible films that the big studios won't. And Roma is now winning so many different awards through all the different critics groups. It's nominated for the Broadcast Film Critics Association and then also the Golden Globes. So this is really giving moviegoers a really good dose of something other than spoon-fed action films or something they're not used to. So Roma, yes, it's in Spanish. Yes, it's subtitled. But I tell people, after 10 minutes, you think you're speaking English. Roma is one of my favorite films of the year. And if you don't get out to the theater and selected markets to see this incredible cinematography on the big screen, it's It's premiering on Netflix on December 14th. See it and be in on the pop culture revolution about this film.
It sounds fabulous. And then you've got this, we've got this Japanese film getting all kinds of attention, Shoplifters. Tell us about that one.
Yes, this is a movie I saw just recently, and I just fell in love with this movie. It's from director Hirokazu Korida. And it's about a family, listen to this, a family that lives in poverty, and the father of the family, this makeshift family, is forced to steal things with his family. They shoplift things. And the wife of his, she works in a laundromat. She finds things in the pockets. And then they have a young boy named Shota who they found in the car. And the story kicks off about them discovering a young girl in their neighborhood, a little girl who's cold, out in the cold, and she's hungry, but she's covered in scars. And they don't want to take her back home because she's being abused. So the father teaches her to shoplift with his son. It's almost like a Dickens story going on, but the director really wanted to express what is family. So the movie is extremely emotional. The family lives with the grandmother who they live off her pension. In addition to shoplifting, it is one of the most emotional, most beautifully photographed and acted movies I've seen all year. It's one of my favorite films, and it's definitely in my top five. Try to see it if it's in your market somewhere. It's called Shoplifters, and you will also hear a lot of awards consideration and definitely an Academy Award nomination for this movie. So do yourself a favor and check out not just Shoplifters, but both of these films.
All right, Jeffrey K. Howard. You can find his full video reviews at VegasFilmCritic.com. Well, anyone who knows cats knows they're smart, but anyone who knows cats also knows they can also seem a bit aloof, at least until mealtime. But don't let them fool you. As VOA's Kevin Enix reports, it turns out your cat is actually watching you very closely and taking behavioral cues from humans.
We all know about the ancient and special bond between dogs and humans. Our canine friends can read our tone of voice and our expression, and they look into our eyes for clues that help our two species get along so well. Well, move over, Rover, because it turns out your house cat, far from being the aloof master of the house, can do the same thing.
In general, we found that cats are very good in following human gazing signals.
In experiments, researchers put two exactly alike bowls of food on the floor, but only looked at one, and guess which one the cat went to.
Whether we do a sustained gaze when we don't take off our eyes from the target, or we do a momentary gaze when we just look shortly on the target and then turn back to the cat. So independently of the difficulty or the level of difficulty of these gazing signals, cats are very good in following it.
The question these researchers are asking now, is it just cats and dogs who have learned to do this because they have lived with us for so long? Or is it something that animals just do?
Cats learn spontaneously that where humans look at, it can be important. And this is a very interesting thing, because then you could ask that, okay, if it is not innate, but the cats learn it, could any other animal learn it?
This is the only test on this done so far, but the results were clear.
We established whether the given cat performed better than picking randomly. Our results showed that their success rate was 70% overall.
Researchers say one of the reasons it has taken so long to learn about this behavior is because cats are notoriously hard to study. Evidently, they just cannot be bothered. Kevin Enix, VOA News.
A singer whose latest single is doing very well paid a visit to Washington this week. VOA's Border Crossings host Larry London joins International Edition's Sarah Williams with details.
Today we're going to talk about a pop star who we've known for a few years, and I've got some breaking news on Meghan Trainor, which I got from the source herself. I met Meghan Trainor last night here in Washington, D.C. when she performed for the annual Jingle Ball Music Festival, and she was one of the headliners. I had a chance to talk to her. Her new album, album number 3, which was originally due for August and then was scheduled for January 25th release, she told me last night it's going to be delayed again. And this hasn't been publicized. I looked for information and, you know, couldn't find it on the web. So I got it from her last night. And apparently she said she's just not ready yet. She's still working on some of the songs. She's remixing a few. And so she's not ready to release the album, which is called Treat Myself. And it's album number 3 for Meghan Trainor. So what I thought we'd do today, I got a lot of news about her from my meeting with her last night. But we're going to listen to one of the songs that's doing very, very well. She's had a couple of big hits off the album already, No Excuses and Just Got Paid. So we're going to listen to Let You Be Right. Here's Meghan Trainor.
Love me, love me. Don't forget you love me. When I break things, make things a little bit uncomfy. Baby, don't hate me. You probably think I'm crazy. And it's stupid and foolish the way we've been behaving. So don't keep dragging this on and on. When you know that you're wrong, you're wrong.
Isn't she from Massachusetts?
Yes, as a matter of fact, she is from Nantucket. She's from a very small area. She said when she was growing up, it's funny because one of the stories she likes to tell is whenever the family ordered Chinese food, it had to be flown in an airplane. She said we were so small, we didn't have a Chinese restaurant in Nantucket when she was growing up. She's about to turn 25. She's 24 right now. Her birthday is December 22nd, and there are all kinds of reports flying around that she's going to get married on that day. It makes sense because she got engaged to actor Daryl Sabara on December 22nd, her birthday, and they've been dating for a couple of years, and she's wearing a huge engagement ring, a diamond ring, and I saw it yesterday firsthand, and I asked her, is the wedding coming up soon? She said, well, yeah. And I said, can you tell me when? She goes, no.
Just soon.
Just soon. And so a lot of media are saying that it's going to be on the anniversary of the engagement a year ago. She's very much in love. She said that several times in the interview and to several different people who interviewed her. She's very, very happy. She's found her man. Now, career-wise, we're talking about a Best New Artist Grammy winner. She won the Grammy back in 2016 on the success of All About the Bass, which was her very first big, big hit. And since that big hit, she's followed that up with many, many other hits as well. In fact, she was called by Rolling Stone that year the most unlikely pop star.
Oh, dear.
Because she herself never saw herself as an idol-type person. She was a songwriter. She turned down a full scholarship at Berklee School of Music and decided she wanted to become a songwriter because she didn't think she had what it took to be an idol. So she moved to Nashville. She wrote songs for Rascal Flatts and a number of other artists. Then she moved to Los Angeles, where she met L.A. Reid. And she said, I got this great song, All About the Bass. And he said, nope, you're going to sing that song. He said, I'm going to make you a star. And she did at the end of 2014, and it went on to sell 11 million copies. And since that time, she has released so many hits like Lips Are Moving, Dear Future Husband, Like I'm Gonna Lose You, which she sang with John Legend, Marvin Gaye, which she sang with Charlie Puth, and Boys Like You. So she is definitely a talented songwriter. She's got the triple threat. She can dance, she's funny, she's personable, and she can sing. Although this has been a problem for her the last few years. In fact, in a Rolling Stone magazine interview, she admitted she had suffered from depression and anxiety after the cancellation of her second tour, which was the result of having throat surgery for the second straight year in a row. Mm. She had throat surgery, she wasn't able to speak, she did rehabilitation, she got back on the road. Again, the same problem. And so she's going to put it out there again and take on the challenge. Maybe that's one of the reasons her album's delayed. Maybe she's not quite ready to go out on tour, because usually when you release an album, you have to follow that up with a tour to promote it. The new album is called Treat Myself, and I'm so excited to hear the new music. She's great. I mean, like I said, I met her last night. This was the second time we'd met. And she's going to be appearing on Border Crossings very soon. You'll be able to hear that interview.
Oh, great.
She looks great. She was the voice character in 2017 of Smurf Melody in the film The Smurfs, The Lost Village. She is a judge on a very popular Fox TV show called The Four. And she's got a great music career. And, of course, her personal life couldn't be better. She's in love. She's happy. She's going to get married.
You know, a number of singers seem to have had trouble with their voice, like Adele. You know,
yeah, Adele and Justin Timberlake has canceled all his shows in December. Doctor's orders. He's got to rest his vocal cords. So, yeah, it seems to be an issue that's plaguing a lot of people, the strained vocal cords. But hopefully they'll all work it out, and they'll all be back, and they'll all do fine because, you know, they've all got great voices, you know, and I really love... Meghan Trainor's got a unique style. She's very 50s, doo-wop. You know, her style is different than most typical pop stars.
Thanks a lot, Larry. That's Larry London. He's the host of VOA's Border Crossings.
I don't want to fight tonight. I'm going to let you be right. Let you be right.
You've been listening to International Edition. That does it for today's show, but you can find us anytime at voanews.com. We thank you very much for joining us, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, John Ellison. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a great day.